Hi everyone, my name is Sinena. Super nice to meet you guys. Today I'm going to be talking about the impact of food on health as far as part of the MedCast elective. We have a lot in store for today, so just going to be talking about how food kind of plays a role. We're going to be talking about different chronic diseases, possibly using food as like a type of medicine. How food inequality and public health measures kind of play into the entire food industry, and then we'll just kind of close it off by talking about what we can do to improve or stuff in the future that's there. But yeah, so if we have time at the end, one of my medical school colleagues might join us and kind of give his input on what he believes should be good food and like kind of his dietary processes and what he thinks of the food industry from that aspect. But if we don't, then I'll definitely be sure to include that another time. Okay, so just to kind of get into it. So, as sort of an introduction, I feel like food plays a really, really fundamental role in pretty much everyone's health, but it's not just used as a source of energy, but also to help with disease prevention and just overall well-being, mental health, physical health, everything. The concept of the fact that food is medicine has been pretty much around for the past 100 years, for centuries together, with so many different traditions historically that are emphasizing the healing properties of so many different types of foods. So many cultures, such as like Ayurveda in India and traditional Chinese medicine, food has been pretty much prescribed as like remedies for ailments long before any type of drugs or any pharmaceuticals were ever kind of involved. So food as medicine has pretty much been around since before you and I, were born, and will probably be around for much longer than that too. Even like the father of modern medicine, Hippocrates, said, there's this famous quote that said, "Let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food." So this is a principle that's constantly being rediscovered, especially within modern nutritional science. Despite this fact, most of mainstream medicine is pretty much like overlooked, well, not necessarily overlooked, but not utilizing the impact of diet as much as they should on one's health. There's a lot of things being done to kind of help once they get the chronic diseases to treat their pain and treat their diseases, but using food as a preventative method and using the impact of one's diet isn't necessarily being broadcasted the way it should, especially at the primary care level and at the emergency department level and at health, the impact of healthcare, like pretty much everywhere. It should be definitely discussed at a much larger scale. However, there is a growing recognition of the power of nutritional medicine in both preventing and managing diseases, which is why it's pretty much on the rise right now. A lot of modern research continues to show how nutrition pretty much affects every aspect of our health, from heart disease to diabetes to mental health and even to cancer prevention. However, all this, like despite this overwhelming evidence, nutrition is still really, really underemphasized in medical education and practice. So many doctors, so many medical students, so many healthcare workers don't receive as much training in nutrition as they should, which pretty much causes like the healthcare system to often focus on treating the symptoms rather than addressing the actual root cause, which is what we were talking about before. Medicine that is used to treat versus medicine that's used to prevent. And a lot of those chronic diseases can be prevented, especially like the leading cause of death, heart disease, is an extremely preventable disease. And food plays a really, really large role in that. This kind of gap pretty much led to the rise of functional medicine and nutritional medicine, which really integrates diet into healthcare as pretty much a key component of someone's treatment. In recent years, a lot of food prescription programs have gained a lot of action. They allow doctors to prescribe food produce rather than just medications. Pretty much countries all around the world are also recognizing the importance of so many different nutrition policies. They've been implementing initiatives all across the world. They've been implementing rules that pretty much encourage healthier eating habits amongst the entire global population. More specifically, I wanted to talk about different food and chronic diseases. So, one of the most biggest issues that we have today, not just in the United States, but across the entire globe, is the impact of diet on chronic diseases. Obesity and diabetes are two of the most common widespread conditions that are very directly linked to dietary choices. This constant rise in processed foods, the high refined sugar content, unhealthy fats, seed oils has pretty much significantly contributed to obesity, specifically and especially within the United States. The obesity pandemic has been rising since almost forever, and all of that kind of plays a role, especially the impact of diet plays a role in obesity. Fast food, convenience meals, so many different beverages that are just sugar-ridden have become almost dietary staples for so many different people. That leads to those metabolic dysfunctions, insulin resistance, and such a high surge in type 2 diabetes all across the United States. So many studies have shown that populations that traditionally pretty much had whole, minimally processed food, but later adopted the Western diet, such as like Japanese cultures and certain Pacific islands, had a really sharp increase in obesity and related diseases. Pretty much pointing the finger to, whole, minimally processed foods, they were fine. But as soon as you kind of incorporated the stuff that we were talking about, fast food, convenience meals, the sugar beverages, unhealthy fats, the processed foods, pretty much in all your grocery stores and everything, that leads to a significant health burden. The addictive nature of these ultra processed foods, that also is an entirely different problem. It becomes not just a physical problem, it becomes a mental problem as well. So, like this addictive nature of the ultra processed foods combined with how much sugar content is pretty much added into everything makes it extremely difficult for individuals that have the right idea and want to maintain healthy eating habits, but just their mind is being controlled with the food, with the processing nature, with the sugar, with their cravings. It's not an easy task, and it's extremely difficult to kind of stay maintain. It's not so much, oh, like he or she or they should just stop eating. It's more so they have cravings, it's really affecting like mental health on top of everything, which makes it 10 times more difficult. So there's so many different debates for using artificial sweeteners possibly instead of these hidden sugars. And that also remains quite controversial because we just don't have too much data to really show us the long-term implications of those. But there are some studies that suggest that they negatively impact metabolic health as well. Some studies that show they can be linked to cancer, but all of those very premature just because we haven't had them for so long to really see long-term data. On a different topic, heart disease, the leading cause of death pretty much everywhere globally, especially within the United States, is another very prevalent condition that is extremely closely tied to diet. The standard American diet, which from what my research has shown is extremely high in processed foods, saturated fats, and trans fats. And all three of these contribute very significantly to cardiovascular disease. On the other hand, diets that are pretty much rich in whole foods, the Mediterranean diet, we discuss a lot of this in medical school and I'm sure in other healthcare schools, but a diet very rich in whole foods, which is predominantly a Mediterranean diet, has been shown to improve heart health by really reducing all that excess inflammation, which then again pretty much promotes better blood flow through those blood vessels and the function of the blood vessels as well. Aside from just like reducing inflammation, omega-3 fatty acids, fiber, and plant-based foods are especially on the rise because we've been able to identify that they play a crucial role in lowering cardiovascular risk. On the other hand, high sodium diets have been shown to really increase the likelihood of a stroke and hypertension because of that excess blood pressure, because of the sodium drawing in water and leading to more water content and then leading to high blood pressure and so on and so forth. So a lot of different diets. There's also, countries that have really high fish consumption, like Japan and Norway. They've been shown to have actually a lot lower rates of heart disease, possibly because of what we were talking about before, the omega-3 fatty acids and their more balanced diet. So pretty much all in all, like to really differentiate between the two, high processed foods, saturated fats, trans fats, and high sodium diets have all been kind of linked to worse cardiovascular health and increased risk of stroke. On the other hand, diets that are super rich in whole foods, like the Mediterranean diet and a lot of fish consumption, which has omega-3 fatty acids And fiber and plant-based diets have been shown to have a really good response in terms of cardiovascular health. Another issue entirely on its own is cancer. So cancer is another huge area where diet plays a very, very critical role. A lot of different dietary habits can genuinely increase or decrease your cancer risk. Specifically, antioxidant-rich foods, a lot of fiber, and specific phytochemicals that are found in different fruits, in different vegetables, and different whole grains really help individuals protect them against all the different types of cancers that you can think of. However, on the other hand, processed meats, processed sugars, processed carbs have been pretty much identified as carcinogenic by the World Health Organization. There have been studies of populations with lower cancer rates, those especially the ones that are following like traditional Japanese or Mediterranean diets, which is what we were talking about before, the high omega-3 fatty acids and high whole foods. That's pretty much been indicating that whole minimally processed foods contribute to better health outcomes, not just in cardiovascular disease and not just in chronic diseases and obesity, but also in like the scariest, one of the biggest scares in medicine today, which is cancer. Obesity is also known, like a very known risk factor for several cancers, which pretty much again highlights like how important it is to have a balanced diet in order for cancer to be prevented. A lot of researchers have kind of looked into potential benefits of fasting and calorie restriction diets in possibly reducing cancer risk and like increasing the support of their treatment, but still a lot more research has to be done from that aspect. But obesity for sure is known as a risk factor. There are so many different diets other than the ones that we were just talking about that really promote longevity and disease prevention. So the most, like the healthiest diet known today is known as the Mediterranean diet. It's super rich in olive oils, in fish, in legumes, and fresh produce, where all of these factors have been associated with extremely better heart health and longer life expectancy. Specific blue zones, basically, which are regions where people live a lot longer than the rest of the population, often follow diets that prioritize whole foods and plant-based meals. The Okinawan diet, which is really high in vegetables, tofu, and seafood, has been linked to very much lower rates of chronic diseases and much higher lifespans, which is what we were talking about with the blue zones. Similarly, the Nordic diet also really, really emphasizes whole grains, fish, and root vegetables. You can kind of predict like the common theme here, those whole grains, fish, fruits, vegetables, what people have been telling us for years are super healthy. And that's pretty much been shown, especially in the Nordic diet, to support metabolic health and reduce their overall obesity rates. So there are several different diets that can definitely help in terms of chronic disease prevention, obesity, cancer, and just longevity, like life longevity. And we can kind of get into that later if we're still interested. But the healthiest of the healthiest foods always and diets always usually have what we were talking about again. So the whole foods, the whole grains, omega-3 fatty acids, fiber, a lot of plants, a lot of vegetables, a lot of fruits. That's really the bulk of the healthiest diets we can think of. So, kind of switching gears, we talked about how food kind of plays a role in all these chronic diseases and some healthy eating habits. I want to really talk about food being used as medicine, this like new concept. It's an old concept, but re-emerging with nutritional sciences now. There's a really high and increasing body of research that shows that the power of food can do so much, can reduce inflammation, can improve gut health, and it can even reverse chronic health conditions individuals have been diagnosed with. For example, going back to the Mediterranean diet, pretty much an anti-inflammatory diet. It focuses really heavily on whole foods rich in omega-3 fatty acids, polyphenols, and antioxidants. Chronic inflammation is pretty much a very high and key contributor to so many different common diseases like cancer, which we talked about, arthritis, cardiovascular disease, and changing your dietary choices definitely play such a crucial role in managing those inflammatory states. Foods such as turmeric and leafy greens like spinach and lettuce and berries are known for their anti-inflammatory processes and properties, while processed sugars and red meats continue to increase inflammation, which, based on what we're talking about, inflammation is not good. I mean, it's worsening so many diseases, it's causing so many chronic diseases, and diseases that are life-threatening as well. Aside from inflammation, gut health is also an extremely new topic and a very crucial factor that's being assessed in terms of overall well-being now. The gut microbiome, there's so much to explore, so much to read, so much to learn from, but essentially it's just a collection of bacteria within our digestive system. It includes digestion, includes immunity, like immune cells, and it also can even impact like neurons and mental health from that aspect. So it's a really key component of well-being. Probiotics now that are being kind of found, which are found in fermented foods such as like yogurt and kimchi and sauerkraut, they really help you, based on so many different research factors, they help you maintain a very balanced gut microbiome. And balance in that nature pretty much balances exactly what we were talking about: your digestion, your immunity, and even mental health. So a lot of fiber from specific fruits and vegetables are being included in terms of like probiotics. They're essentially feeding into beneficial gut microbiome bacteria. And so many different research studies have linked gut health to mental health, showing that an unhealthy gut microbiome can pretty much cause or contribute to conditions such as depression and anxiety. And what is your gut microbiome really composed of? I mean, and how is it impacted by food? Food is like the biggest thing. Probiotics, like we were talking about, those fermented foods and yogurt, kimchi, sauerkraut, and fiber from fruits and vegetables. All of that plays into your gut microbiome and your gut health, which is all again impacting your immunity, your mental health, your ability to fight back chronic diseases, and just your overall well-being. So, again, just reiterating how much food plays a role for your body. In terms of plant-based diets, so there was a lot of research being done on plant-based diets, and there's, I mean, based on what we can see, there's a lot of benefits to plant-based diets, especially in reversing heart disease, because that's pretty much been well documented for forever. Physicians such as Dr. Caldwell Esselin and Dr. Dean Ornish on specific studies have conducted research demonstrating that plant-based diets can not only prevent, but can also actually reverse heart disease, which is incredible to hear. These diets pretty much improve endothelial function, enhance blood flow, and reduce plaque buildup. So, a lot of heart disease and cardiovascular disease is pretty much riding on those three things that we just talked about: endothelial function, how your blood vessels are formed, and are they leaky? Do they have cracks in them? Are their arteries clogged? Endothelial function is extremely important to how those arteries are pretty much being built and how they're being conserved. So, if these diets are able to improve that, they make it stronger, they make it better for blood to kind of flow through. On the other hand, diets are also improving blood flow, and that we can pretty much consense that that's the best thing possible. You want your heart to be constantly pumping as much blood as possible to the rest of your body. When there's stuff that's blocking that, that's when heart attacks occur, that's when issues occur, that's when you have limb ischemia and so many different types of problems. But you want there to be constant and well blood flow. And then the last thing that I talked about was reduced plaque buildup, very similar to kind of like that endothelial function. If there's anything blocking it, or plaque pretty much blocks the arteries and doesn't allow those blood to flow through. And when your blood doesn't go to your heart, it doesn't go anywhere else. You don't get it to your brain, you don't get it to the rest of your body, and that's extremely, extremely detrimental for your health. So if research is really showing that these plant-based diets can improve that function, the endothelial function, increase blood flow, and actually reduce the plaque buildup after even it's already formed, that really shows how it's not only preventing, but also reversing that heart disease. The long-term impact of a plant-based diet on cardiovascular health is pretty much profound. So a lot of individuals are really trying to provide like a very compelling case for reducing animal product consumption, pretty much so totally and over like overall. However, there's still a lot of debates in terms of like effectiveness for different diets, such as plant-based diets and ketogenic diets, which really promotes eating a lot of high fat content and absolutely zero carbohydrates. But there's still a lot of like research kind of being done in terms of how those two diets really affect cardiovascular health. However, despite all of this growing evidence supporting food as medicine, a lot of individuals and a lot of physicians often do not incorporate nutrition into their practice. And that doesn't necessarily stem from them. It also stems from where what they were taught, how they learn, and what they kind of, preach to their patients. This lack of nutritional education in medical school can happen because there's so much to learn in medical school, and we're really hyper-focused on all the different diseases and all the different treatment plans and all the different managements. That can be possible. And I mean, the human body, every year there's more and more diseases. So every year it's more and more on your plate. So nutrition is kind of being pushed to the side. However, that really leaves the doctors without tools to genuinely provide dietary guidance that will reduce the impact and actually cause like impact preventative care, which will reduce all of these chronic health diseases at a much higher level. But a shift is happening, especially with the rise of like lifestyle medicine. A lot of internal medicine residency programs are internalizing that lifestyle medicine curriculum pretty much everywhere. But it's an approach that integrates nutrition, exercise, and stress management into their healthcare system and how they teach and how they prescribe. So a lot of doctors are prescribing diet changes instead of medications now, because based on everything we just talked about, there's a profound impact that food really has on long-term health outcomes. So, kind of shifting gears here, I wanted to talk about, while we talk about how great food is and how much we can use it as medicine, there is a lot of disparities in terms of food inequality and public health measures. Not everyone has access to these healthy foods. Like, it's very common and extremely prevalent all within this country, and especially globally as well. Food deserts, which are basically areas where fresh and nutritious food is extremely scarce or expensive, they definitely disproportionately affect lower income communities. These areas pretty much often have like a really high abundance of fast food restaurants and convenience stores, but they don't have grocery stores where they're able to find like provide that fresh produce and whole foods. So those fast foods and those convenience stores kind of provide the foods that we were talking about before, with the high seed oils and the ultra processed chemicals and the heavy, heavy sugar content, which is all causing, cancer, cardiovascular death, cardiovascular disease, obesity, and all those chronic health conditions, as opposed to grocery stores that are really providing the fresh produce, which we were talking about helps and can actually use food as medicine. Unlimited access to these healthy foods just continues to increase the rates of obesity and diabetes and cardiovascular disease, specifically within these lower income communities. A lot of these places just don't have any grocery stores that they can grab and have access to food from. They have to walk miles, or it's just not accessible in any way, shape, or form. So they resort to what they have in that area. They go to the McDonald's, they go to Wendy's, they go to KFC and indulge in all of these fast food areas where there's just high processed food on high processed food on high processed foods. They just don't even have access to these healthy foods to use it as medicine. What we were talking about before, food is the best way, and not, if not the best way, it's the easiest way and the one that we can implement to the best of our ability. But if you are born into a lower income household, or if you're living in a lower income household, or sometimes even a middle income household, a lot of these food deserts are disproportionately, meaning they're affecting those population groups at a much higher rate than all the other population groups and all the other communities. So, in order to really combat this, there's a lot of initiatives that are kind of taking place now because we've recognized that as an issue. Urban farming is one that's like pretty much on the rise. Community supported agriculture programs. These two have really aimed to address food deserts and improve accessibility to healthy foods. There's different government policies that are pretty much also in shape too. But government policies play a really crucial role in shaping dietary habits and like what people think of food and how what they're introduced to in terms of food programs, such as like the supplemental nutritional assistance programs and all the different school lunch initiatives impact millions of people. but they both have strengths and limitations. There's always an ongoing debate of whether, you should really stop providing those sugary foods and donuts and unhealthy food options in the cafeteria. And with Michelle Obama, there was a plan that really reduced a lot of those options. Speaking from my own personal experience, I remember the first year that I was in high school, we had these huge, ginormous, like almost cookies the size of my face, being sold to us in the cafeteria for like 50 cents, genuinely 50 cents. And, people, they were delicious, they were amazing, but they were completely filled with high processed sugar and high processed oils and butter and things that will not keep us healthy and will definitely contribute to those chronic diseases. And after she implemented her nutritional assistance program and really focused on a healthier America, we didn't have those options anymore. They got rid of the huge, ginormous cookie, and we only had what we could find in our vending machines. And even that was changing by the last year. So pretty much eliminated those like super high processed foods being, in terms of like fresh food being given to us. So there's definitely been government policies that play a crucial role in that. And also like the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And actually like what's being served to us in school and lunches has, like I said, impacted millions and millions of people, but there is still a lot of work that can be done from that regard. There's also like this ongoing debate of whether we should tax sodas and sugary foods, maybe to possibly kind of reduce those obesity rates. It's been a talk that's pretty much been around for forever, ever since I was born, which is at least 25 years. So the idea is people will eventually like not will want to save their money, will conserve their money and not want to indulge in as much. And that'll help reduce that sugary and soda content. But also because of the way those food deserts are set up, there's that debate of if you do this, then most of those people in the lower income neighborhoods are going to have nothing. Like they just won't be able to eat at all because they don't have the money, they don't have the financial like programs or financial ability to even buy food from the table then if those tax rates are going to be so high. So obviously that's not a solution. I mean, what we were talking about before, really increasing access to food, that's the best solution, especially for individuals that live in those food deserts. But taxing those types of foods, those sugary foods and soda, has definitely been talked about and constantly been debated. Some countries have actually implemented like food labeling laws to definitely increase consumer awareness about the actual nutritional content of products. A lot of that is sometimes hidden. It's sometimes hidden and not really seen to the naked eye. So there are countries that have really honed down on making sure that the labels, food labels, are accurately describing what's actually being in there, what's actually in their content. On the other hand, a lot of marketing strategies are being used by food companies to really promote like unhealthy choices, unhealthy eating options, and this raises an entire new like ethical concerns about advertising to children and vulnerable populations. So some good is being done while, bad is also being done as well. I remember reading something about is breakfast really the healthiest meal for you? And what they were talking about was a lot of these cereal companies' marketing strategies were basically used to tell the entire United States that breakfast is the best meal for you because they wanted you to sell their cereal. I don't know actually if breakfast is the best or not wor like worst meal for you. I have no like knowledge of that. I've tried to read into it and it's pretty vague and like we don't really can't really come up with an answer for that. But the fact that that could be a possibility that these marketing strategies and bigger companies utilize their product, they focus on their products a lot more than they focus on your health. So they want to make money, they want to sell their products, they'll tell us what we want to hear. So if I have no clue if that's actually right or wrong, but if that is, and they were really just targeting that, I mean, pretty much the entire like United States is thinking on a different, like completely different mindset that they should be. So like, yeah, these marketing strategies used by different food companies have a lot of ethical concerns, and especially about advertising to children, because something sticks at that age, you pretty much, do it the rest of your life. So it's harder and very like it's sad to see. So pretty much overall, wanted to kind of conclude what we were talking about. There's so much that we can improve, especially in terms of health, like small, sustainable changes in diet that can really make a significant difference for you overall. Simple steps, very simple steps, such as incorporating more whole foods, reducing all of the processed food intake, cooking at home, decreasing the sugar intake, they can genuinely lead to better long-term health outcomes. Personalized nutrition is gaining a lot of popularity. There's a lot of research been showing that different people respond to different very differently to various foods, just depending on their culture, their background, what they grew up eating, what they didn't grow up eating. So personalized nutrition is definitely on the rise. There's so many different advancements in terms of technology, such as food tracking apps and AI-driven nutrition plans that will definitely make it a lot easier for individuals to really like make informed dietary choices. And try to the best of their ability to make changes in their diet. A lot of policymakers have a very high role, like very substantial role in shaping healthier food environments, which we were talking about before. A lot of different government interventions, such as like food subsidies for healthy produce and stricter regulations on processed foods, can definitely encourage better eating habits. This is kind of what we were discussing before with those taxes on sugary foods and processed foods. In terms of the ethical debate between personal responsibility and government intervention, always will be there. But there is a sense of increasing recognition that systemic changes have to be made in order to really improve the health of the overall public, especially those suffering within food deserts. So just wanted to say at the end, like food is not just fuel, it's genuinely a key determinant of one's health. Making conscious and intentional food choices and always advocating for better nutrition policies can definitely help this country and individuals globally and communities globally live a lot healthier and longer lives. So thank you for listening. I hope to see you guys again soon.